To be militant is not to be revolutionary. The movement today is greatly influenced by militancy. However, upon close examination, we find that the thrust of this militancy is for reform and not revolution. We must begin to see it as our role to put down militants and militancy if it is used in a counter-revolutionary fashion. Militancy has co-opted the whole struggle. The important thing has become how bad you talk, how long your natural is, what kind of uniform you wear. These are militant issues. These are issues militants speak out on, reformist issues. Well, the time for uniforms has not come. Get an army first, and then, if it's necessary, get uniforms. Naturals, it's not necessary that every black person wear a natural, and it's more important for political people not to wear naturals unless the masses of people wear naturals, because what happens is that the man sees the natural as being political, whether it is or not. We have Negroes running around with naturals on their head and nothing on their mind. Black people are seriously talking about revolution, not reform. There is no substitute for sound revolutionary politics. There must be a re-evaluation of politics in this country. Politics as defined in the geographical and influential confines of this country is irrelevant to the masses of people. Now, I'm not calling for a redefinition of politics, see, because politics has been adequately defined. We examine what Chairman Mao says about politics. He says that politics is war without bloodshed, and war is an extension of politics. Black people in this country and oppressed people throughout this country must begin to share this definition of politics. The vote has been used as a tool against black people, and now black people must seize the vote only to use it as a tool for organizing to fight against that oppression, the oppression that grips them. Now, if you began to examine the Democratic and Republican Party, the so-called bipartisan parties of this country, you find out that politics in this country are not bipartisan. They are very partisan. And they're partisan toward white people, rich white people with money. So you find yourself saying, you know, what value is the Republican and Democratic Party to oppress people in this country? The answer to that is none. They serve no function other than oppressing people, oppressed people in this country. Now, when you examine Republican and Democratic Party, you find that the similarities are greater than the differences in those two parties. Every candidate who's running today is running off the same platform. Whether George Wallace is elected president or not is not really significant to black people in this country, because Wallace's doctrine has dictated the whole domestic program for the next 4 years in this country. In other words, if Humphrey, who is much an enemy of black people as Wallace is, gets in, black people should be prepared to fight Humphrey. If Nixon gets in, who is as much an enemy of black people as Wallace is, black people should be prepared to fight Nixon. So what we find is that politics in this country must become meaningful to black people. The vote is really meaningless because we don't choose who we should vote for. Camus once raised a point which says, what better way to enslave a man than give him the vote and call him free? And this is essentially what has been done to black people. Everybody runs around and tells black people how important it is to vote in 1968 to keep such and such a person out of office, which is not really important. Because in 1968, what's really on the line, what's really on the stake, is that black people in particular, who are the vanguard group of the revolution, must prepare themselves both mentally and physically for the confrontation which will be forced upon them by the repressive government which will get into office and which operates today. I contend that in the next few years, after the inauguration, the repression on black people in this country will significantly rise. If you examine the laws that have been passed in this country the past 3 years, these have been repressive laws directed against the masses of black people in this country. In other words, the Omnibus Crime Bill, which legalizes wiretapping and electronic bugging, says that if there is a potential revolutionary threat in the country, then it can be destroyed because we can legally eavesdrop on you. We can legally come into your house by the use of wiretapping and electronic bugging. The anti-riot bill, which is another of these legislations. The anti-riot bill tells black people when they can travel, how they can travel, and if they can travel. That's a direct denial of human rights and of rights which are supposedly guaranteed to citizens of this country in the Constitution. So therefore, in terms of politics, America understands very well that politics can be made to mean many things. In other words, politics, the definition of politics is very flexible when the oppressor uses it against the masses of people. Now, in the movement, we find that people often mistake politics and being political with what America considers politics. In other words, the two-party system, or this monolithic party that America has, the white party, the WPP, White Power Party. And black people in the movement tend to identify with politics along these lines. They tend to stress the importance of the vote. And they see politics as just being the vote and putting people into office. But that's not true. You have to realize that everything that you do in this country is political. Every move you make is political, and every move that white people or the ruling class makes against black people is political. When Tommy Smith and John Carlos took the stand in the Olympics and refused to stoop down to the national anthem, that was a political act, and it was treated as a political act. The Olympic Games themselves is a political game. It's East versus West. And on that point, when I was on the air a few weeks ago, I said that we expected Lee Evans to do the same thing. However, we found out that Lee Evans chose not to follow the line that Tommy Smith and John Carlos set out. He chose to take the line of Foreman, of Jim Hines, Charlie Green. You find Lionel Hampton campaigning for Nixon. You find Wilt Chamberlain campaigning for Nixon. You find James Brown writing a song, America is My Home, and when black people began to turn against him, then he comes back and makes a song, I'm Black and I'm Proud. And this enters into the cultural realm, which, you know, people have to be very aware of, because the whole movement is in danger of being co-opted by the politicians of the white power structure. They recognize that if they can get black people thinking culturally, they don't have to worry about them moving politically. If it can become sufficient to be black and proud, then you don't have to worry about the oppression that grips black people. To be black will become ego gratifying. In other words, black people will form a cult, and they will be nothing else but black and proud, and they will boogaloo to the concentration camps when the man chooses to send them there. So we have to begin to interpret about politics in this country, and which politics are relevant to black people, and what type of politics are relevant to black people. Now, we find that the cultural movement, again, the cultural movement in the black community, tries to operate in a framework outside of the political movement. In other words, they see themselves as an entity in themselves. In other words, they say that the theater is important, and writing is important, and poetry is important to black people because we must know ourselves. I say that black people have known all along that they were black, and in terms of what will make black people fight for survival, it will not be that identity. It will be oppression. It will be the nature of oppression. When the repressive laws are put on the book and black people can no longer move freely as they do now in this society, then this will make black people fight. This will make the oppressed people in this country fight. Repression, not the type of identity that people choose to believe will lead black people to freedom. Logical extension of cultural nationalism as it is practiced today is black capitalism. In other words, black people are becoming capitalists. Black people find it profitable to talk about cultural nationalism. They find it profitable to set up dashiki shops and to become the capitalists. They find it profitable to run the white man out of their communities, because then they can come in and begin the same type of exploitation, which is dangerous. So I want to talk about cultural nationalism as opposed to political nationalism. I think the black movement has to begin to address itself to political nationalism. First of all, we find with cultural nationalism that the structure sees in cultural nationalism a type of ready-made convenience. In other words, he can afford to support and endorse cultural nationalism. For example, in New Jersey, some white people got together. This was in Atlantic City, New Jersey. White people got together and donated $8,000 to some black people to open a bookstore and a dashiki shop. Because if they get black people to think in the lines of cultural nationalism, they don't have to worry about black people moving politically. In other words, if you can create a black capitalist, then you don't have to worry about your system being jeopardized. And on the other hand, when people begin to move politically, they understand that it is a system that black people, it's a system that we are fighting against, and that system is capitalism itself, and that political things must be done. Now, it is true that it was necessary that black people evolve to the position where they recognize that they in themselves are worthy of freedom, which is granted to every man. In other words, you were born free, and you have to exercise that right to be free. Black people, you know, for a long time were deprived of the very, should we say, the very thought that they should be granted freedom. They never even thought that they should be free. So therefore, in terms of the limited type of liberation that came along with cultural nationalism in the sense of black awareness, has served its purpose. Black people must move on from there. Logical extension of cultural nationalism as it is practiced and advocated today is a cult, which does not address itself to the survival of black people because we live off the timetable of the oppressor. In other words, when the man decides to move down on black people, whether we know it or not, when his timetable say this is the day to move against black people, then he will move against black people, whether we are black or not. It could happen on the very day that all black people in this country, if all our energies were directed into the cultural phase of struggle. It could happen on the very day that every black person in this country grew a natural and decided that he was black. What's going to prevent the man from coming into your house and take you? What you going to do, whoop him off with a dashiki? You have to prepare yourself physically, and that is political. Culture without politics brings economic and political liberalism, not revolution. In other words, you're trying to become, your quest is to become liberal in this country. If you talk about culture without politics, as a matter of fact, culture has to be defined by politics. The first thing that black people must address themselves to is the political nature of revolution. This is what will allow black people to unite with other groups, with other, and form alliances with other groups, other minority groups in this country, to fight the oppression that grips all people in this country, all poor people in this country, and basically all people of color in this country. Black people are not the only revolutionary force in this country, and they must not elude themselves to believe that they're the only revolutionary force in this country. They happen to be the vanguard revolutionary force because we have been the most dispossessed. But revolution can be aborted. And if the man can co-opt our movement and have the black movement fighting against the Puerto Rican movement, fighting against the Mexican-American movement, fighting against the American Indian movement, and even fighting against the developing revolutionary white movement, then the black movement is in trouble because we have to fight on every front. We will have to fight on every front. We'll have to be prepared to fight people who are potential allies. So therefore, we see that the problem, you should see that the problem is not so much who you identify with in the sense of the black movement, the Puerto Rican movement, the American movement. If there is a revolutionary movement, these forces must begin to move together. You must allow for this in your political cultural thinking, in your political cultural movement. It must allow for that. We must understand that nationalism alone is not a political doctrine. Nationalism has to be a part of a political doctrine. Nothing else, nothing more. Before you can talk about nationalism, cultural nationalism, economic nationalism, you have to talk about politics. You have to redefine for yourselves and for your movement what politics is and what politics means to me. And how can this politics be used to further the revolutionary struggle, the struggle of liberation for oppressed people in this country? So I want to end by saying that in terms of politics in this country, it has become very necessary, it has become crucial that the vanguard and the so-called vanguard groups began to address themselves to political ideologies, began to address themselves to politics as it is relevant to the movement. And from this politics will flow your cultural nationalism, your economic programs, and not before. This is Rap Brown saying, Lasima Tushunde Bila Shaka. We shall conquer without a doubt. Power for the people.